listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
Hey, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sorry, we're watching the cliff fall again. Holy crap.
It's just the side of a cliff fall on top of a Brazilian boat. Like they were just
tour. Boats. Like a tour kind of thing.
Holy crap. I have never in my life seen anything like that.
Boy,
it's
you
easy
talk
to
about
find.
Bad luck. Holy
I'm crap. Not going to retweet that because last time I retweeted something, I had so many people say, "Where was your trigger warning? This is going to ruin my life." And I guess I grew up with like Faces of Death and seeing stuff like I'm maybe a little more desensitized, but I guess people getting hit by a giant bolt by a giant side of a mountain could be impactful to people. So I'm not going to retweet this. So you guys will have to just search it up. You'll find it on Twitter, though. You'll find it in the news. Just do cliff collapse and you will find
it. Yeah, you'll see it. It's awful. It is really, really awful. I went to the Rockets game last night and I don't understand. I really don't understand what Coach Silas is doing. For the most part, he's basically got two teams, and you're going to Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green were on the floor the whole with each other, but they sat. It's a 48-minute game. They sat 22 of it. They basically played just over a little half of the game. Christian Wood as well. He played two more minutes than the other guys, but otherwise it's those three and then the second team. And it's not like any of them, you know, played well. They were all minus 14, minus 24, minus 18, minus 18. And Kenyon Martin Jr. was plus 10, but otherwise you had zero pluses in there. He played 27 minutes, and it's not like he did anything. He was four for 10.
So watching from courtside, did you notice any kind of lack of effort defensively? Like, what does it look like in person?
Oh, no, I saw. Holy crap, dude.
I mean, they got 30 a quarter. They never held them under 30 in any quarter.
Listen, they could not have shot better. I mean, it didn't matter what the Rockets did. In your face, they were falling away for threes. They just shot lights out on the Rockets. Now, as far, you know, rebounds, 56 to 45. There was that. They didn't have size inside. They couldn't get any. They couldn't stop them on the offensive boards. It was just that was bad. That was bad. 18 offensive rebounds against 10 offensive rebounds for the Rockets. I did notice this now. Jalen Green's first step is real. Holy crap!
It's explosive.
It's explosive. He doesn't look like he's even trying, and he gets past the guy. He's going to be Jalen Green. I don't know about his shot, but I do know that his athleticism is off the charts.
Yeah, he's got a chance to be special. His ability to the rim and in the air to create is really, really special. Like, he's got unbelievable first-step quickness.
I don't understand Coach Silas's substitution pattern. I don't get it. I don't. I'm not understanding. I didn't understand that. Şengün is in street clothes. And I just for the life of me can't get why he's not getting more minutes while Jalen Green isn't, why Jalen Green isn't playing with anybody other than Kevin Porter Jr., why Christian Wood isn't playing more. I don't get it. He doesn't have his best five on the floor. And by the way, he's taking them all out at the same time and not having anybody. That second team, now the second team was actually better. They were better against, but this is a learning season. For 10, 12 minute stretches, you got your guys that are the future sitting on the bench, as opposed to getting them a blow and getting them back in there. I don't get it. I don't get what they're doing now. They lost and they weren't any good, and the starters were the ones that got beat. But you're getting beat anyway by 20. Put them back in there. Let's see what Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green, and let's see maybe Jalen Green with DJ Augustine, who didn't sniff any time, or he and Josh Christopher together seemed like they weren't on the floor at all at the same time. So I don't know. I did like I do like the explosiveness. Kevin, I will say this, on top of the substitution patterns, the Rockets don't have an offense. It's just, it's really a
collection of guys who...
Just, I've got the ball, so now I'm going to go, I'm going to try to do something with it as opposed to
That's disappointing to me because that's what Silas was known for, coming over from Dallas. He was known as a guy who had, and while they had a great creator over there, a one-man creator and you know, and Luka, what Silas has been known for is that ability to create an offense, and this offense is a series of one-on-ones and a series of isolations where you work off the isolation to create. And when they went through their winning streak, one of the things that happened was there was a little bit more ball movement because they didn't have those two isolation guys in KPJ and Jalen Green. They had a series of guys who, well, here's Brooks and here's Tate, and then Wood was playing and DJ wasn't playing.
DJ was on the floor.
You had, yeah, and DJ Augustine, who was a pure point guard. You had a collection of players who had to find shots somehow, and the best way to do that was sometime moving the basketball. This is a concern for me because they really need to get out of – they're not talented enough to just – and efficient enough to just say, okay, now your turn. Go do something. Go do something, KPJ. Go do something, Jalen Green. They're not efficient enough as scorers. They're just not. And so you've got to you got to do a better job of finding ways to get an offense to flow because it is. It's just a mishmash of players on a court at any given time doing any given things. You see flow or consistency, whether it's Silas's pattern of substitutions, who, and granted, there have been players in and out of the lineup. I get that. But it doesn't feel like he has a flow of substitutions. It doesn't feel like there's a flow offensively. It just feels like a collection of bodies and something that will not look anything like this in 2 years. And I think, unfortunately, that's going to include Silas. I don't think Silas is going to I'm not 100% sure Silas makes it out of this year. If they don't have some more winning streaks and if they don't really show something, I think there's eventually going to be some more. It wouldn't shock me if there's more issues with Kevin Porter Jr. or Christian Wood or maybe another player where they challenge the coach and we have more drama that some national reporters reporting on. That wouldn't shock me at all because I don't know if this – I don't know if Steven Silas really has control of the team and is really moving the team forward in a positive direction where you see them building on, you know, you see building blocks. I just see some talented flashes and some players like, hey, I could see Jayshon Tate's role. Hey, I can see Christian Wood has value to move. Hey, you can see the first step with Jalen Green. Well, this kid's got a chance to be really special. But do you see them building towards something right now? Does it feel like that?
No, but the NBA is a collection of players. You know, get talent. Get, you know, you've got to, you need stars. You need guys that can put the ball in the hoop. And I think you found it with Jalen Green. He's so young, so raw.
But you could see it developing with the Warriors back in the day, before they took off with Mark Jackson. You could see it with, even though the wins weren't there.
Let's not forget, though, this is the first year.
No, you're right. But you could see it with the Suns, too. This piece, and then this piece, and then this piece.
Until they put, right.
But you saw, okay, I can see something bubbling, but can they unlock it?
Until you put Chris Paul with them, though.
Right.
They were a bad basketball team.
But Jalen's going to have to get to the early Devin Booker stage. You know what I mean? Like, Devin needs to look like young Booker on the way that he's more consistently coming up. And there is a chance. Like, he's shown flashes of it already this year.
Right. All right, 713-780-3776, 812 on ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5.
Analytics, another weird day for analytics in football yesterday, by the way. Chargers. Let's see, winning your end playoff game, and you're going for it on 4th-and-2 with an inside handoff from your own 18 in the third quarter, up 3. Huh. Analytics? Do you have... Where did analytics go?
Yeah, I'm seeing
analytics.
I'm seeing a lot of Brandon Staley is the dumbest coach I've learned.
I know analytics has those things out there.
He's following the data.
So we'll do that on the other side, right here. Analytics on the other side, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. In the meantime, what are you going to do your leg dap so that this doctor can?
So I will see that doctor sooner than later if I try the leg dap that we saw from North Dakota State. A player jumped in the air. Now, this was a fairly explosive leaper. He jumped in the air, bent his leg at an angle, and did what can only be described as a leg dab, the first ever of its kind. A lot of people had comments about that and what would happen to me if I tried to do that. I know the first thing I'd do is I'd call Dr. Lateef over at Bayou City Foot and Ankle. That would be something I might have to ask about hamstring and hip, you know, the hip joint. But I've had the plantar fasciitis. It is a nightmare. I wish I would have known Dr. Lateef back when I had that, because it lasted almost a full year. If your first step out of bed is a painful one, you probably have plantar fasciitis. And there are treatments that can work for you and work much more quickly than trying to wait it out and just do occasional slant board stretches. And Dr. Lateef can help you get back on your feet and pain-free. Call him today at 281-500-8891. That's 281-500-8891. Heel pain, foot and ankle injuries, running and sports injuries, children's foot care, bunions, hammer toes, even diabetic foot care. He does it all. And Dr. Lateef is a former athlete who knows what it means to get you back and healthy. Call today and schedule your appointment, 281-500-8891. And make sure that you do it with Dr. Lateef at Bayou City Foot and Ankle.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. The conversation continues on The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 8:15, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Analytics strikes again. I've never seen anything like it. Lance, it was the no fun league for so long. You'd be on your opponent's 39-yard line, fourth and one, and every NFL coach would punt. This is far back as 5 years ago. You want to talk about tight? Every coach with just like diamonds they're making out of coal. Because they're just so play it so close to the hip, and it's just the opposite now. What in the hell was Brandon Staley thinking?
Up 17-14 with about 9 minutes to go in the third quarter, you're on your own 18. If you win, you are in the ball game. He did two things that were crazy. The first one is going for it there, and he's been using a very similar approach all year long. This isn't new. People who, and I think the analytics-driven crowd who works with the same concepts that you use in baseball and basketball are being exposed in football, because it is fluid in football. It cannot be viewed as static, where the decisions are not alterable. They are steady, and you just adhere to the data. You cannot do it in football. You must take into advantage. You must take into account situation, players who are performing, and likelihood of success. And what will happen if you don't? In other words, it's easy to shift every single time. That's easy. But if there is an instant instant reaction that can hurt you. What am I looking for? There is not retribution, but there is an instant negative response to a bad decision or a faulty analytics decision that goes awry. In baseball, what happens? Well, we didn't shift, or we didn't, or we pitched lefty on lefty, and you give up a home run.
Yeah,
that's fine. In football,
or with the base open, we didn't put them on. Or yeah. Whatever.
I mean, you can get instant. You know, obviously, there's instant negativity that can happen if you don't follow the analytics there. But in football, you just gave someone points immediately. As soon as Brandon Staley went for it and didn't get it, he just gave at least three, if not seven, to the opponents who he has to beat to get in the playoffs. You put in football, analytics should be a tool to help you make decisions, but your decisions should not be static decisions like, well, every fourth down and less than one, we're going. Every fourth down and less than two, we're going for it. That's what the data says. Then you need to really have someone else making decisions if you are not factoring in the consequences of failed adherence to data. You got to, because this killed them yesterday. It absolutely killed them. To give them points, you punt and you move forward from there. And don't tell me about the numbers and the data and my bias. I don't want to hear about that. You must make it harder for the Raiders to score.
Aaron, see anywhere if we've got Staley explaining that. Let's try to get that. In the meantime, Coach, I don't think Coach Culley did anything that – I don't think Coach Culley did anything egregious other than – I don't know. Okay, so 2 minutes
– By the way, here's a first
– 2 minutes plus
Bloody
left.
Monday. What is this called? Hatchet Day Monday or – Bloody
Black,
Monday?
Bloody, yeah, whatever. Black Monday for NFL coaches. Nagy fired, which was no surprise.
No.
Fangio fired yesterday. No surprise, really. But Coach Culley called, with one timeout left, he threw the red flag out on a first, what was clearly a first down. And he challenged it. And even the guys in the booth were like, yeah, I think you got to challenge it there because if he doesn't get the first down, then it's fourth down. He gets the first down, but you wasted a timeout. After that, the game was over. I don't know that I would have challenged there. I think it's arguable. The guys in the booth all thought it was arguable, and they thought that he should have challenged. I disagreed. If the guy upstairs says no, he got the first down, it's obvious. Then don't challenge, and you keep that timeout, and you possibly make them punt. Even if it's 20 seconds left that you get the ball back, you still might get the ball back. You took away any chance to get the ball back in that situation. But I didn't think Coach Culley did anything egregious in this game as opposed to many other games that he coached. It looks like Coach Culley is going to be back, and some are saying why, and some are saying, listen, I don't think you're not going to be anywhere near talent-wise good enough to compete next year. Let Bo Culley take the losses until you get good enough. And you don't – if I'm Josh McDaniels, I don't want this on my resume next year, right? And I think that it's – I don't know that it's obvious, but I think it's pretty clear Josh McDaniels has to be one of the favorites. Now, Josh McDaniels may say, I'm waiting for Belichick to leave because I'm the obvious replacement here.
Or he's waiting to see if Davis Mills is any good. Because if Davis Mills next year throws 23 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, I don't care what any of you think, he's moving towards being a decent quarterback. I mean, he's going to be your guy, and he's somebody that Josh McDaniels may say, you know what, we've got a bunch of picks from the Deshaun deal. They just got done drafting, you know, Evan Neal. I got myself a left tackle. They moved Tunsil out of there and got a future first for him or 2 seconds or whatever. I mean – all of a sudden, Houston can go from being right now one of the worst jobs you could possibly take to a pretty good job with 1 year of Davis Mills growing into a better quarterback next year and an abundance of draft picks based on trades. All of a sudden, this might be a place that you want to be other than, you know, ownership and Easterby.
Yeah, well, but if you're Nick Casario, well, I don't think Nick Casario is letting Jack Easterby run anything.
No. I think you're pretty – like, let him do his thing where he pretends football and all that stuff. That's fine.
Yeah.
I think Nick Casario's like, he's fine. I just let him pretend football and we're fine.
Yeah.
That's what I think Nick is, because Nick's not – I don't think Nick Casario is likely to catch a knife in the back from him, especially if they get the gang back together where it's Josh McDaniels, Nick Casario, and Jack. Like, all right, guys, we got the gang back. You know, then it's going to be.
All right, so here is Brandon Staley talking about going on fourth down from his own 18-yard line.
Yeah, I felt like that was going to be a drive starter for us, you know, generate some steam for our offense. Felt like we would get it. Felt like we had a good play call with the duo run, and they just knifed in there and made a good play. But was really looking to get our offense started, get our engine started. And, you know, they just made a play and we didn't.
Well, I guess that, okay. It's inexplicable what these coaches are thinking now. It can't be a bigger 180 going for it on fourth and two from your own 18-yard line. Goodness gracious. I mean, a lot of coaches won't, before they kick field goals from the opponent's 18-yard line and not go for it. You're going for it on fourth and two from your own 18? Just ridiculous.
Well, let me tell you something else that happened in that game. For those who didn't see it, because it lasted a while, they had the ball at the 39-yard line of the Chargers. The Raiders did. Now, remember, this is a scenario that was brought up, and I remember Aaron, to his credit, brought it up to us about the tie between the Chargers and Raiders. Both teams get in. Both teams get in. The Raiders had the ball at the 39-yard line of the Chargers with, it was 41 seconds, and it continued to run down. They called timeout with 38 seconds. The Chargers did. The Raiders were just going to run the football. The Raiders were going to take a crack at kicking a 50-something yard field goal with Daniel Carlson, and if they make it, they win. If they don't make it, they tie. That's good. Everything's good. I mean, if they make it, they win, and if they don't make it, they tie.
Yeah, it was Lanya for the Raiders to kick that field goal.
Yeah,
because they were in.
They were going to get in. So all the Chargers needed to do was get a stop and then hope that they didn't make the long. And Carlson has a leg to make it from 57-56. What they needed to do was just keep it from being a big run. Now, Staley called timeout because he said he didn't have good defensive personnel against the run, which is understandable. But what happened was he saved 4 seconds. The Raiders were just going to run the ball anyway, take it all the way down and kick a 50-yarder. Instead, he called the timeout. They gained 10 yards on the run, and they kicked a 47-yarder to beat him. How do you call timeout to get your personnel in and then give up a 10-yard run? Like, that's hard to believe. The Raiders knew what they were doing. The Raiders were like, we're in this thing.
Well, apparently the run personnel that he had in the game before the timeout were able to score a touchdown. This one gave up only 10.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
That was it. That was it. Boy, talk about the Chargers. What a disappointment. Again, it's the same stuff. They just find a way not to get into the playoffs once again. And Herbert couldn't have played better. You couldn't ask more from that guy, from what he did. It's just the Chargers. It's just what the Chargers do. All right, 827 ESPN, 975-713-780-3776. Well, actually, Pat Forty's joining us on the other side, right? Pat Forty, we hope he's going to join us. And maybe we're still working on Ian Fitzsimmons or what? Yeah. Oh, we're going to get him tomorrow? Okay. So we'll do that. We got Pat Forty joining us on the other side, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, talking about the national championship game. In the meantime, a little site jab.
SiteJab is making websites that are killer, unbelievable websites, really fantastic websites. What they do is they can knock out a homepage for you. If it's something simple, like they're going to do for my parents' football clinic, they can get it done very, very quickly, like in a week. That's not a problem at all. If you want something more expansive, they can do that for you as well. They're self-made. Hector and his crew, they started right here in Houston back in the late 90s, when the websites were first kicking up. They've gone through all the different changes, all the widgets, all the integration of video, and now what they have is they can integrate video, they can shoot it for you, they handle the branding, they can do e-commerce for you on your website, they can build simple pages, or they can build multifaceted, multi-layered pages, HTML5. I mean, they do anything that you're looking for, and they do it from right here in Houston at very reasonable prices. Go to the website to see their entire suite of products and shop local and have the local guys do it. SiteJab.com. That's SiteJab.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You found the Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back. 831, guy who was with us all season long, and he is at the big game in Indianapolis. Pat Forty joining us right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 to talk about Alabama and Georgia. Pat, welcome back.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How was your holidays? All good?
Yeah, very good. Now ready for one more football game.
One more football game. And it's, Pat, I mean, this whole season, this is what it's been coming down to. These are by far the two best teams. It's a rematch, and we've had a few of them in championship games or in playoffs. This one is really – do you understand Georgia being a favorite after what we saw the first time they played?
Well, it really is kind of a little bit antithetical for a Nick Saban team that won by 17 points to play the same team a month later and be an underdog. But I don't know. I kind of agree with it. I've watched both these teams a lot, but I've really watched Georgia a lot, and I've seen them play 13 great games and one terrible one. and I expect them just to play better. And I think they match up well, especially with the injury to John Metchie at receiver for Alabama. I think that was the biggest problem for Georgia, was how do they cover those guys. And now they've got one fewer guy to cover. And I think they're going to learn from what went wrong in Atlanta in December.
That's my point is, they played, things went extremely well for Nick Saban and his squad. If you're Alabama, you want to do, I know it's more complicated than that. Nick has to make some changes and alter some different things and disguise some things, but it just feels like Kirby and Georgia have more areas that they could work on and tighten up than it does for Nick. And I always wonder, well, how does that impact game two if all things are relatively equal on a talent front?
Yeah, and that's, you know, like you look at Georgia's defense, which I think is one of the best defenses we've seen in years, and they didn't get a sack and they didn't get a turnover. And I think both those things probably changed. You know, I think they get Bryce Young on the ground, they change up, maybe bring a little more pressure, and I think they probably force a takeaway or two. And then on the other side of it, if Stetson Bennett doesn't throw the ball to Alabama, which he did a couple times, then, you know, I think those things can make the difference. Now, again, like, we're asking Nick Saban to be beaten, you know, in a championship setting, and the Heisman Trophy winner to not play as well, and probably the best defensive player in the country in Will Anderson to not play as well. But I think once you get past them, players 3 through 15, I think most of them are Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah. No. But I can't get past Bryce versus Stetson and Nick versus Kirby. That's hard for me. I just love when Alabama, how many times have we seen Alabama as an underdog in over the last, since Nick's been there? Well, since after Nick's first year. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
No, it's extremely rare. It's unlike, yeah, you know, on our podcast, Dan Wetzel was saying, like, you're going to give me Nick Saban and the points in the championship game? Yeah, I'll take them. And he may be right. I don't know. We will see. And I'm probably being a little bit stubborn because I've just thought all year that Georgia was the better team. And the Georgia that I saw in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta in December just didn't look like the same team. So I'm expecting them to revert to what has been their norm.
Do you make anything of playing a team a second time, beating them twice in the same year?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it definitely helped Georgia. First of all, like, you know, to taste your own blood, so to speak, you get punched in the mouth and, oh gosh, maybe, you know, we're not unbeatable. And then, yeah, you take that and learn from it. And I think especially defensively, they're going to be a smarter team. And I think Stetson Bennett will be a smarter quarterback as well. I'm not sure I'm not sure that it's, you can't beat a team twice, but I just think that the learning curve for Georgia should be pretty significant here.
I just think that, I don't know what Georgia's going to do. I can just see them staying in base. I don't think they'll do anything different, but obviously you want to keep them from hitting chunk plays, because one thing we've seen with Alabama this year, Pat, is they have issues with playing with flow and consistency offensively. They go into stretches where they're just not very consistent or very good. Some of that, I think, has been on Bill O'Brien's plate, and some has been having a freshman quarterback who is just not at that point to where he's going to be in complete command of the offense. How you prevent the chunk plays and the gash plays, I think, is going to be the real key to Georgia winning here. Can they just sit back in deep shell coverage and say, look, Brian Robinson, if you're going to beat us, go ahead and beat us, but we've got a front that we think can stop you.
You know, I think that's what they would ideally like to do, but
right.
I also think that they know they've got to heat up Bryce Young more than they have. And so, you know, it's kind of a little bit choose your game plan. But I do think, again, it's easier. Like, I think they wanted to bracket both John Metchie and Jameson Williams as much as they could in coverage, and that meant we're only rushing 4. And now you got one fewer wide receiver that you've got to devote, you know, a safety to, and now you can bring a little more heat into the box, and I think that could change things there. But at the same point, yes, I think you're right that, you know, Bryce Young has had a great season, but there have been stretches where he's not that accurate. You know, He is young. There are times he maybe struggles to get them out of the huddle and into formation and get plays off and make changes and that sort of thing. So, you know, if you're Georgia, you have to say we got to do some things differently. But at the same time, if you still think you're the best team and your defense is the best unit, you know, make Bryce Young prove he can play on an extraordinary level for a second time.
Pat Forte, Sports Illustrated, joining us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Pat, everybody, look, Cincinnati got blown out. They shouldn't be there. The ratings were terrible. We've seen terrible ratings on New Year's Eve before. We've seen blowouts of big teams, and we saw a blowout Michigan. Did Michigan not belong there either? Is this
good
a
for
death
that one.
Knell for the group of five, what happened with Cincinnati against Alabama?
No, I mean, like, Cincinnati did better against Alabama than Michigan did against Georgia. So, like, you know, I don't think that's indicative of what conference you're from. I just think that these two teams have been way better than everybody else. You know, Big Ten teams, Big 12 teams, Pac-12, ACC included. And so you're going to have that when two teams are that far ahead. You know, I'm not saying it's good for college football, but I would not say that lay this off as an, oh, the AAC can't produce a team that, you know, that can compete, because nobody right now is producing a team that can compete with Alabama and Georgia. The recruiting rankings say it. What they've done, 2019, 20, and 21, they are both undefeated against other teams outside of the SEC. 11 in a row for Georgia, 12 in a row for Alabama. That's the way it is. And it doesn't mean, you know, Cincinnati, you know, by any means didn't live up to what they should have been.
Well, the recruiting, you know, we haven't talked to you since the signing day. So Texas A&M, apparently, with all the reports, were just better prepared NIL-wise than anybody else was. And it showed with their recruiting class, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, A&M is ahead of the curve. And from what I've heard, it's like A&M, Texas, USC are really poised here in 2022 to take advantage of the new rules or the lack of rules or whatever the heck it is. And, yeah, I mean, A&M, I mean, there's a lot to sell there, but still, all of a sudden you jump up to number one, then, yes, there's probably a monetary reason why. It's what you're doing with your NIL opportunities there. And this is the new world. Will it always be this way? I don't know. You know, I'm not sure the NCAA can get that horse back in the barn in terms of rules, and I don't know what they should. But for now, yeah, if you are organized and committed and you got your boosters in line to do whatever they need to do for recruits, then you're going to be ahead.
Yeah, I think that this is the tricky thing is there's some things going on right now with how NIL is being built out, where it really runs contrary to what everyone was being sold from an NIL standpoint, and they're just being used now to make the rich even richer, which is, I mean, that's already happening with the way that the monies are divided up, Pat. At some point, the NCAA should probably step in and try to regulate. I guess the question that, and John and I discussed this the other day, it felt like their hands-off approach because they almost felt smited. And they were going to show everybody, okay, look, we won't do anything then. That was one of the worst decisions that they could have possibly made, because it really opened up floodgates and it is going to make it harder to regulate now.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it's necessarily feeling smited. I mean, there might be some of that, but I think it is, we have fought this tooth and nail for 50 years, and now we can't really fight it anymore, and we don't know what to do. I mean, like, We are going to open up the market and then try to adjust from there. And again, I think it's going to be hard to adjust once you do that, once you open that market. But I think that, you know, it's one of those things where the NCAA resisted and resisted and resisted, and then ultimately, you know, you're on the wrong side of history, so to speak. And so things, the pendulum swings a long way the other way. And now we'll see what does that mean? Does that, you know, is it total free agency? Is it just completely sign with the biggest offer? Or do they try to, again, make this what it was supposed to be, which is not recruiting inducements, which everybody knew was going to be a fallacy? I think they walked into this probably knowing, okay, we've got to open this up, but we can't really control it.
Pat Forty here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. That Ohio State-Utah game might have been the – I think it was – what was surprising was how deep is Ohio State at wide receiver, but also the surprising is how bad was their defense that day?
Yeah, right. Their top two receivers didn't play, and then they had a guy go for 347 yards and another guy, true freshman, catch three touchdown passes. I mean, staggering. And if you think – Jameson Williams from Alabama was on that team last year, too. I mean, it's astounding the wide receiver talent they compiled there. It was a great game. It was a lot of fun. Ohio State, I think, you know, if you start with Alabama next year, but then Ohio State is right there second. And it was a good reminder that to a degree, you know, if you've got enthusiastic teams, even with people opting out, bowl games can still be a heck of a lot of fun and very dramatic.
Yeah. I mean, not everyone is the playoff. I think you still can watch great. There's still good football out there. A lot of fun. For half the schools are really, really happy this offseason because they got a bowl win. All right. Who do you got tonight? What's the score?
Georgia 24, Alabama 20. I think relatively lower scoring. I think it's more a phone booth game than a wide open game that it was in Atlanta. And I think Georgia learned from what happened. I think they're the better team. And you know what? I'll probably be wrong again.
You know what we call those, John? We call those division flip flops.
Yep.
I mean, these are but basically pro teams. The old division flip flop. Whatever the pace was the first one, you fade it and play the opposite side the next one. And I do think, for what it's worth, that's what it looks like. I mean, Georgia has too much pride. But once again, can't get past this. Can Stetson Bennett beat Nick Saban? I wish it wasn't that simple, but I can't get that out of my head. Is Stetson Bennett going to beat Nick Saban? That's tough for me to wrap my head around.
Hey, you know what? I don't blame you. And Stetson Bennett's been one of the Georgia, you know, him and Jake Fromm have led Alabama. I mean, they're always ahead, and then they can't hold on. And so we'll see. Does it, you know, in the second half, if this becomes a match throws with the Heisman Trophy winner, then Georgia's in trouble.
Got to be the train conductor. Right. Georgia's got to stay on time and on schedule, and let them be a train conductor. Because you're right. If it turns into all right, go to gunslinger mode. What? I don't have that mode. Uh-oh.
Pat. Yeah. Pat Forty with us all year long right here on ESPN. It's been a great year, man. We really appreciate you, and thanks for joining us again this morning.
My pleasure, guys. Enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
There's Pat Forty. He was with us all year long. Great, great college football guy. 713-780-3776, the number to hang up with us here on ESPN.
Big news when we come back. There was a firing in the NFL that I didn't see coming.
A few. There's a couple more this morning.
Oh, really?
That we haven't announced.
Okay,
yet,
we will get to. We'll give you the latest update. Stick with us here in 3 minutes. We're going to get back to some of the NFL firings, and you're going to be pretty surprised about some of them.
Yeah, we'll do that on the other side. But right now, we're talking about my bookie. What? You got the game tonight. Okay, well, who are you playing? Who you got? My bookie has everything you could, all live betting tonight, but all of the props that you could possibly want are all on here. It's ridiculous how good this is. If you're looking for the best way to play, win, and get paid, and oh, by the way, not only that, but if you refer a friend to, how about $250 in your bank account? So all you got to do is refer that friend. Right now, the game is at 2.5. And you've got all kinds of props that you can play on it as well. Who's going to, I mean, first half, second half, who's gonna throw for more yards, longest TD, all kinds of great stuff. If you're looking for the best way, I'm telling you, my bookie is awesome. Here's the deal. Whatever you deposit, how about their match deposits all the time? They give you all kinds of opportunities. They give you all kinds of free plays. It's unbelievable. And when you win and you want your money, you get paid. All at mybookie.ag, promo code BET975, promo code BET975.
Why don't we take a break?
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. The usual suspects fired. Yesterday it was Fangio, Vic Fangio from Denver. This morning Mike Zimmer got fired. Matt Nagy got fired. Ryan Pace, the general manager of the Bears, also got fired. Brian Flores was fired.
I didn't see that coming.
I didn't
apparently, see that one either. Ian Rappaport had a tweet that said, I'll tell you what he says here. Ian says that basically, I'm going to pull up Ian Rappaport right now.
I could certainly see Flores getting a job right away.
Head coach or coordinator? Because whatever he's owed, they will pay him up to that number. So if he gets a job as a $600,000 a year coordinator, you subtract that from what he's owed in his contract with Miami is how that works. Here's what Ian Rappaport said about this. The Dolphins fired Brian Flores. Sources say while general manager Chris Greer stays at GM, a power struggle in Miami. He ended it with that. I guess he means between Greer and not Stephen Ross. I get because Stephen Ross had an entire thing that he put out there. But I guess between Greer and
Flores.
And Flores.
And Greer won the power struggle.
Yeah, I guess there was a power struggle there. Now, well, what a surprise, a Patriots head coach who wants to have more of the power. But both of them have a Patriots background. This is a little bit surprising to me. And the Patriots have already said, or rather the Dolphins have already said, we're not targeting Jim Harbaugh. Well, Jim Harbaugh, I think there might be something already in the works with Harbaugh going to the Bears. I think Jim Harbaugh is going to be the next head coach of the Bears. But Stephen Ross just basically had a statement. I made a decision today to part ways with Brian Flores. After evaluating where we are as an organization and what we need going forward to improve, I determined the key dynamics of our football organization weren't functioning at a level I wanted to be at and felt that this decision was in the best interest of the Dolphins. Do you hear that? Listen to this. Now with the idea of there's a power struggle, listen to this again. I determined the key dynamics of our football organization weren't functioning at a level. The dynamics weren't functioning. That tells you interpersonal communication, and you can't have that stuff going on for that long. And here's an owner. Now I want you to compare. I want you to compare and contrast how the Texans have handled
yep.
Bill O'Brien and how Stephen Ross, a stronger owner, who I don't know if he knows what he's doing or not, but I know he's a functional owner. He says, okay, we can't have this. Cal McNair,
the head coach. Know your
what
lane.
Do you think, preacher?
No. Head coach, know your lane. And yeah. You know what? And Stephen Ross said, we can't have this because there's too much headbutting going on. Okay, we'll get rid of the head coach, even though it's maybe a controversial decision. The Texans, no, Brian Gain, beat it. No, beat it. Bill O'Brien can take it, can handle this. No, he couldn't. He was awful. He was the worst ever. So, yeah, no, that's, you're right, a strong owner. Now, there's a lot of talk going on, and some people who are adamant that Coach Culley needs to go. Because we referenced it earlier in the show. It's his decision making. No egregious faux pas in this football game. I thought challenging in the last 2 minutes of the game was I didn't like it. Well, just over 2 minutes left in the game that he challenged when it wasted a timeout that he could have used because it was obvious he wasn't going to win that challenge. But I don't see it, especially when you sign him to a long-term deal. Why would you sign him to when you knew he didn't have head coaching experience? You didn't know he would have so many bleep-ups that he as many and as egregious as they were. But he's you know the regular head coaching moves that should be obvious to a guy who's an NFL lifer weren't obvious to him, but. You're not ready to win yet. You're not ready to win yet. And somebody's got to be Bo Porter, and it's Bo Culley. Bo Culley is I don't see any reason to get rid of him and get another head coach in here that is going to take on all of these losses. I don't see maybe it's Lovey waiting in the wings, I guess. I guess it could be Lovey, but why do that when you've got Lovie as the defensive coordinator and he can continue to develop as a coordinator as opposed to being head coach? You lose a good coach. You lose a good coordinator if you put Lovie in that position.
Yeah, and but what if you had Brian Flores in that position?
Brian Flores is in. Well, here's the deal.
Brian Flores in a head coaching position.
If Nick Caserio, who's a New England guy, they're all New England guys together. If Nick Caserio feels like he can. Now, if Brian Flores is going to be difficult to work with, though, Lance, you're getting yourself into another Bill O'Brien situation. And whether or not, you know, can Nick Caserio keep Brian Flores in check as opposed to a guy who is trying to. Listen, he's the opposite. Brian Flores would be the opposite of David Culley. He'd be a guy who wants to be in the discussions for buying the groceries.
Well, but maybe that would be okay.
Listen. Caserio has got a puppet right now. Somebody wrote this morning, as a matter of fact, the reason that David Culley is going to continue to be the coach here. What's that? Florio wrote that. He's got a puppet in place. Why would he get somebody that is going to butt heads with him on decisions?
Yeah, I mean, but the guys you're talking about, Josh McDaniels is going to be the same way, though.
No, they work together well.
I know they've worked together, but not in this capacity. And I just think that anybody you get from the Patriot tree is going to, I don't know. I just think could this have anything to do with the Deshaun thing versus Tua? Because there have been some people in Miami act like, okay, so supposedly the guy that really pushed hard to get Tua over Herbert was Dan Marino. Dan Marino's all in on Tua and convinced Ross, this is the guy we need. Now Tua has played better. Is there a chance that the head that maybe the Ross family and Greer say, maybe it's Greer. I'm just throwing hypotheticals. Maybe Greer says, no, we want Deshaun is the guy we need here. Tua, we can't get there with Tua. I disagree with you. Tua, look how Tua's played. Is there any chance that maybe Tua is the guy that is causing the friction between head coach and general manager? Or the quarterback decision?
Apparently, Stephen Ross wanted Deshaun Watson. And maybe Flores wasn't on, Brian Flores wasn't on board with that. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe it has something to do with that.
It's the other way. Maybe Flores would want Watson and doesn't believe in Tua and career. And Ross says, "Hey, you got to get on board. The guy's coming around." You know, I don't know.
Well, allegedly, because we don't know these things. Stephen Ross wanted Deshaun, so maybe that was it. Here's what Florio wrote about David Culley. By all appearances, he's safe, and for good reason. He's essentially GM Nick Caserio's puppet. Together, they've done enough this year to do it again next year. it's so awful, but I've said it, and now Florio saying it as well. I hate to call the man a puppet, but quite frankly, this is what it is. And I just don't see them paying him long-term contract, paying off on his contract. I don't know what the terms of his contract are, but allegedly it was a 5-year deal. I don't see him paying off 4 years of a deal when what's the sense? For who? For what? They're going to lose again next year. What's the difference? Let's build this thing with a nice guy. Everybody's egos are soothed over, as opposed to a guy that's going to come in here and be a hard ass, not like Bill O'Brien, because nobody's a hard ass like Bill O'Brien. But
I thought
Culley was a very good coach for this football team. I thought he was a very good coach.
Okay.
Now,
do you want to say that out loud
again? I will clarify my comments on the other side. 859 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Do that on the other side. Your guys have thoughts. If you have thoughts as well, 713-780-3776.
ESPN 97.5.